This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring the dulcet tones of myself and my co-host, known to some as the 10-speed and brown trio of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 34. It's Sunday, January 27th, 2013, and our topic this week is my second Xcode 4 rant.
Okay, wow. So then a couple of things there. First, I think that is the first pair reference that I do not know.
Do not get.
So you're going to send me to the Wikipedia, as I can tell.
Yes, that's actually okay. a show that was on in 1980, only on for one season, and is notable for a very early appearance of Jeff Goldblum.
Okay, there you go. There you go. Before he transformed into the fly.
I believe so, yes.
Yes. Okay, and a second Xcode rant. Now, I think you're only allowed two per podcast series, right? So don't you burn up your entire quota with this?
Well, I think of it more as one per year.
Okay. Yeah.
So since this is a new year, I'm allowed one for 2013. Now, the first one, my first Xcode 4 rant, so-called, was in our fourth episode. Now, it was listed as June 21st, 2012. Now, it was actually recorded on June 8th. You remember our little thing with the release dates?
Right.
Because we did as part of our initial release after WWDC, ours was WWEC for a whole week of Edge Cases, which sounded like a good thing to call it at the time. But now, actually, I think we're going to be, well, we've talked about this, that I'd like to actually change those dates in our show notes, in our episodes, to be the recording dates like the rest of our episodes are. And that may actually seem a bit inconsistent to some people when I have said on a previous shows that I would rather keep the shows as is, keep the past unchanged. Mm-hmm. But I do think in this case, it is sort of like this is an edge case of that, because this was something that we actually changed after we recorded the episodes for a very particular time period. So in any case, I'm probably going to go back and do that. So you may notice that if you go back into our older episodes at some point. But yes, so that first rant was mostly about the project window. So I'll be talking about something else this time around.
Okay.
But first, follow-up. So do you have any follow-up, Wolf, for this time?
Not for this time. Probably next time.
Okay. And I was wondering, what's the unit of follow-up? Are there pieces of follow-up? Is follow-up sort of a undifferentiated plural noun, follow-ups, or something? I don't know. But in any case, actually, so one thing that I heard this week, although it was recorded before that, was the last episode of Hypercritical, and we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. So the last episode was called Metacritical, and in it, John Syracuse talked a bit about the Hypercritical podcast itself, and he claimed in this last episode to have actually invented follow-up itself.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear this?
Well, I did hear it.
So that seems a little iffy to me. No one ever had any kind of follow-up in previous episodes, earlier than 2 years ago. Seems a little odd.
The man's an innovator.
But, I do have to say, I don't remember hearing anybody do it before then. I mostly listen to the talk show, which doesn't quite have that format at all. So it could very well be. So I was mostly treating it as calling it FU was Syracuse's innovation. But perhaps just by doing follow-up at all, we are paying homage to him. So there you go.
And hopefully royalties.
Royalties. Yes, well, we did get that one flatter
that's right,
last week. So we'll
see. Have to spread that out over the year. Yeah.
Yeah. So the second piece of follow-up, I have been following Peter Hosey on Twitter, and his username there is Boredzo, the word bored, B-O-R-E-D plus Z-O. And he's been tweeting about his use of AppCode for a while now, but then he went ahead recently and made a couple of videos of how he uses AppCode. So I thought that would be interesting. So I will put a link to the tweet in our show notes, and then the tweet will have a link to the videos, and you'll be able to read those if you feel like it. That'll probably be my last mention of him tweeting about AppCode, just because it doesn't seem like there will be any end to it. And if really, you should just go follow him if you're interested in that. And then let's see. So the last piece of follow-up is actually something that's in the episode itself already, or at least in the show notes. So for my last episode, episode 32, The Case Against Xcode Plugins, I mentioned as part of the end of the episode when we were speculating about Apple's plugin architecture that I thought that they had used HexFiend, the source from HexFiend, which is a a byte viewer by Peter Ammon, that they had used that in Xcode itself, thus proving that you could just plug virtually anything into Xcode. But I was merely speculating about it in the episode itself. Well, it turns out after the episode, but before we recorded the episode, but before we released it, I did tweet about this. I put out a question out there, and this was answered by Chris Espinoza, famed Apple employee number 8, who is still at the company after all these years. And he verified that what I had suspected was actually true. In the tweet, he said, yes, used both in the hex editor and the debugger memory views. But if you look at those views versus the current version of HexFiend itself, you'll notice that they look different. And the way to reconcile this is to look at the acknowledgments in Xcode, which are available from the About window in Xcode, and it lists the HexFiend copyright dates as 2005 to 2009. Mm-hmm. So Xcode is using an older version of HexFiend instead of the most current, which is actually something of a theme with Xcode, I think. For a long time, it was using an older version of GCC, for example, and it's used older versions of Java and that sort of thing. So let's hope that they update it at some point to use the latest one. But there's that. So the notes for this are actually already in episode 32. They will not be in this episode, episode 34, because I did figure it out before then, but I figured it was worth mentioning.
Okay.
Alrighty. So I will get on with it then. So in episode 4, as I said, I was going over the Xcode project window. And one of my themes there, maybe the overarching theme of the episode, was that they had sort of crammed too much into a single window in order to make everything look orderly and aesthetic. But while they made it look that way, they kind of screwed over the actual functionality of the application, functionality that developers rely on. Now, I mentioned during that episode that I wasn't going to go over the other major source of content in Xcode, the other type of window that you tend to open, which is the organizer window. And so that's what I'm going to cover today. Now, the organizer has a pretty interesting history that I'll go over a little bit of. It was actually introduced in Xcode 3 during 10.5 Leopard. And that version of the organizer was very different from the Xcode 4 version that we are living with today. Wolf, do you remember anything about that old organizer?
Yeah, I remember they kind of, I think they introduced it, could have been before the iPhone or something. I seem to remember that they, like, when they first announced that DubDub, they were like, oh, look, you can put various projects in here. And it just seemed like, oh, you can do that. Why would I want to? Type stuff.
Right. So there's some very interesting history that I'll go into. So I remember some of it. Obviously, I was working on Xcode at the time, although I didn't work on the organizer itself. But in order to refresh my memory, I went back to the Xcode 3 release notes. Now, if you go to Apple's developer website, Xcode 3's release notes are no longer there. Not surprisingly, Apple does not focus on the past as much as some of us crazy developers do. But you can still find it publicly and on one of Apple's servers. And it's actually the server where they hold the archives for the Xcode users mailing list, which I don't think too many people use anymore. I guess some people probably do. But it's mostly gone over to the forums, developer forums. But during that point, they were still using the user list. And so they posted the entire release notes, split up into 4 different posts in order to not be too long, on the Xcode users mailing list. And those were posted by, can you guess who posted them, Wolf?
Chris Espinoza.
That would be Chris Espinoza. Yes. Yes, indeed. Got a new one. So he has actually been a presence on the mailing list, answering lots of people's questions. You've probably seen him there if you have done any posting on Apple's forums or mailing lists. And so I'm going to read a little bit from here. The Xcode organizer is available in the Windows menu. It is a convenient place to drop project files, non-project text files, or entire folders of frequently accessed information for quick reference and navigation. The folders in the organizer represent the contents of directories in the file system. You can move, rename, delete files and directories, and you can... The build, clean, run, and action tools allow you to attach arbitrary shell commands, shell scripts, AppleScript files, or automated workflows to organizer folders and invoke them from the toolbar or main menu. So that's... Of course, that's very different than what the organizer is today.
Very different.
And... So it was sort of a reference pane for files, which is something that Xcode didn't really have before. So I'm going to go into a bit of a digression. We'll see how long this takes. the project window for Xcode, you can't ever just see a folder as is. Mm-hmm. You sort of have this Hobson's choice. You can either use a group or you can use a folder reference. And I believe groups came from CodeWarrior. That's why they had them. At the very least, they were aping CodeWarrior functionality for that. Mm-hmm. And groups are an entirely Xcode-specific organizing mechanism. They don't have to reflect what's going on in the file system. And they won't unless you keep them up to date manually in Xcode as you change things in the file system. But you need groups because their contents are the only contents which you can treat as full-class citizens. You can only treat files in groups as things that can be built, that can be added to build phases, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas if you use folder references, the little blue folders, which most people don't use, folder references, on the other hand, let you see the contents of the folder as is on disk. They update themselves for that. But their contents can't be used for anything like that. You can't use a file inside of a folder reference as part of your build in Xcode. So you get either one or the other. You get a something that you don't have to update for the changes in your folder contents on disk versus something you do have to update, but which is useful. So I'm not a big fan of them in general. Now I think they use groups for the same reason CodeWarrior used groups, which is that in the old days, it actually helped compilation speed quite a bit to have all of your, I believe it was header files, in one directory. Wolf, is this sounding familiar to you?
It doesn't, but I'd be surprised by that, but because I still think it had this special precompiled header feature, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah, so that's true, but I do know that, and that was one way to get around some of those issues as well. But the idea for me was that sort of searching for headers goes a lot faster if they're all in one folder versus multiple folders. So I think the idea was, well, you put all your headers in one place, but then when you want to organize them sort of in your own head by functionality, you can put them in subgroups in your project. And I do that myself sometimes, but there's other kind of projects where I already have the files in groups, in subdirectories, and then I also use groups in my Xcode project, and then you've got to keep them all in sync, and that always, entropy always wins when it's not easy to keep things in sync. You're never going to keep them in sync. They're always going to diverge as you go. And so I find that rather annoying that they need to do that. However, Xcode 4 does replicate the Xcode 3 and Xcode 2 and Xcode 1 group functionality as is instead of introducing something new. So that's, I can see why they did that, but it's unfortunate. But with the organizer, what they did was they said, well, okay, here what you see is what you get in a kind of way, in that now you're operating with the file system directly. Now, why did they do that? Well, I think it might have been pitched as a way to build open source projects within Xcode. Because you have to remember, at this point, with Xcode 3, the iPhone had been released, because it was released in the spring of 2003. Uh-huh. 2007. Hello. I don't know why I said 3. Right. Xcode 3, 2007. But they hadn't yet announced you being able to use Xcode itself to build your own iPhone projects. That came in the beginning of 2008.
Okay. I knew it seemed the timeline was kind of screwy with in terms of relationship with the iPhone, yeah.
And Xcode was really quite a different beast conceptually, the way they were portraying it for us as end users, before the iPhone came out. Because before the iPhone came out, Xcode was really kind of trying to be everything to everyone. You remember it actually still had Java support, and they were pushing into scripting support at that point. They had scripting like Python and Ruby syntax coloring, for example.
Right.
I believe that came about either in Xcode 3 or Xcode 2.
I know some developers would use like Xcode even as an HTML editor.
Right. Right. And I believe that was intentional, that they really kind of wanted you to, if you're doing anything developer-y, use Xcode. And so this is something, this is internal information, but it was like 5 years ago, so I think I'm okay releasing it now. In that, what was going on with the reason for the organizer, at least as far as I was told, as far as I heard, was it came about because of worries about TextMate. Now, of course, TextMate was very big, and I think it was about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. TextMate was going like gangbusters. Everybody wanted to use it. It had a lot of cachet, it had a lot of momentum. But TextMate was not an IDE. TextMate was merely a text editor. And I believe, now I haven't used TextMate myself. Have you used TextMate?
Well, extensively.
extensively. Okay, so great. So you'll be my resourcer. Now, they don't have project files per se, right?
Yeah, typically you just kind of drag a folder representing a project onto the TextMate icon, and it opens up in this little drawer.
It opens up in a drawer, right, where you can reference these files and edit them and do stuff with them. Well, that's what Xcode was trying to replicate with the organizer, because what they wanted to do was they wanted to be able to say, we can do everything that TextMate does. And so you don't have to use TextMate, you can use us. And there were enough of these discussions and enough features, although I don't remember any of the others coming in particularly, possibly scripting support was enhanced for this case as well. But there were enough of these things that the joke internally was that the next version of Xcode was going to be called XMate instead of Xcode. And again, I think it was mostly this idea that, you know, you wanted everyone to use Xcode for everything. And I think once the iPhone SDK came out, they kind of retrenched, whatever you call it, retreated, mm-hmm. about that to say, well, you know what, we've bitten off as much as we can chew just getting iPhone stuff working at all. We're no longer going to try to be everything to all people. So a lot of that kind of faded away. Mm-hmm. But one thing that does make me curious about this is, so the organizer was kind of a TextMate killer at the time. But I wonder, because yeah, it wasn't, people didn't really use it for that. It wasn't something that took off and a lot of people used. And I think it got a lot of people scratching their heads as to why it was even there. I do wonder whether they were already thinking about using it for iPhone capabilities, even in Xcode 3. Like they were introducing it as sort of this other ostensible reason, whereas what they actually meant was, okay, sometime in 2008, we're going to make this do what we really want it to do, which is handle device stuff. And I'm curious about that, although my money would be that they didn't, that wasn't it, that this was just something that what I had heard about internally, even though I was not disclosed on anything, was the real reason, and they changed their mind about it later. But it was interesting.
It kind of makes sense, considering that, you know, Xcode is very project focused, and so the organizer kind of makes sense for everything that we have to deal with stuff that spans projects.
Right, or stuff that doesn't have a project.
Right.
I believe they actually eventually exiled Java to the organizer because they used kind of that ability to arbitrarily invoke some sort of build action on an arbitrary directory as a way to invoke the Java build commands. Mm-hmm. But really, it was definitely a way to demote Java, I believe, because they were saying was, it's no longer important enough for us to spend time supporting it as a project target. Now we're just going to demote it down to, you know, regular old scripts and other things.
And before you go too far, I just wanted to say that I think Invoke the Java has a very, you know, release the Kraken type feel to it. I want to say that should be a show title.
release the Java?
I believe it was Invoke the Java.
Invoke the Java, right.
Anyway, go on.
Duly noted. Okay, so... So that was Xcode 3, and I actually don't remember exactly what Xcode 3.1 looked like. So Xcode 3.1 was, as far as I can tell, when they released the iPhone SDK. Whether they still included this file reference functionality in the same window, in the same organizer window, or whether they just completely supplanted it with iPhone stuff. I don't have Xcode 3.1 running on my computer anymore. It's actually pretty hard to install Xcode 3 on Mountain Lion. It might not even be possible anymore. So, mm-hmm. And it's not that important. But certainly by Xcode 4, all the old organizer stuff was gone, and it was replaced with a whole bunch of other stuff that was all really pretty much unrelated. All these separate windows that would have been their own thing in Xcode 3 were kind of all thrown together now. And that included, let me get my Xcode window up here, that included SCM, device support, and documentation as the big things that most people would use. And again, if it's not clear just yet, I'm not really a fan. Because, you know, no one is going to say, Xcode, I want to get organized. Therefore, I will launch the organizer. You know, you just don't do that. What you say is, you know, hey, I want to clone a repository. I want to take a snapshot with one of my devices. I want to look at some documentation. No, you have individual actions that you want to take, but that you have to go to the same window to do it. And it really strikes me that this is another case of them attempting to make things look simpler without helping the developer much. Because what that means is you have to take intermediate steps sometimes to get there. Like if you go there and you have to get to click a different tab, it's not that big of a deal, but it's, you know, what is it really helping to put all these things together in the same window? It's not really helping anything at all. And it actually reminds me of something with, it might have been Xcode 3, it might have been another time. There was actually a point during Xcode development where we were told Xcode menus are too long. You need to make them shorter. And, you know, it wasn't the case where they said, well, okay, we've looked at Xcode's functionality, and you guys are really too complicated, so you need to remove some functionality to make things easier for newbies. No, it was merely make them look simpler.
Hmm.
Wow. And if you remember, there was a case, you know, and again, it might have been Xcode 3, where Xcode's menus did become shorter, and they became shorter by hiding more stuff. They put more stuff in submenus. They made menus that were combined. So when you click the option key, for example, and like in Xcode 4, you can see some of this too. The save menu item, if you click option, now says save all.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to other applications where, you know, save and save all would be different menu items. Well, that decreases discoverability. Because now you gotta think to open the menu and keep it open and hold down the modifier keys to see everything. It becomes like a treasure hunt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you actually added, again, you've added, even if it's minor, you've added extra intermediate steps for the sake of making things look simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is one thing that's really frustrated me about a lot of Xcode development. And again, now we see it in the organizer. So let's see. So if that were really kind of all I had to say, which is, hey, they put all this stuff in the organizer and it's unrelated stuff and we're done, then the episode would be over right now. So see ya. We'll see you next week. But in fact, okay, I'm gonna add a few more things about each of the tabs, things to sort of round things out. So let's see. The first tab is devices, and I don't have that much to say about this. I think I probably could talk a whole episode about just about Xcode's device support. I do have to say that I believe it says something that they didn't make a new window called device support in Xcode 3.1, that they decided to cram it into something that already existed there. And I think that says something about the relative importance that was given to this piece of functionality. Now, it could very well have gotten its own window, its own named window, which you say, okay, I want to do device stuff, now I'll go to the device window. Because you're never really organizing. Wait, you're organizing your devices? No, you're not. You're looking at your devices. You're doing stuff with the devices. And I actually, when I was thinking about this, putting together this episode, I was thinking, you know, they could have gone even further than that. They could have made a window, but a whole other app for it. I mean, can you imagine what that would have been like? Like a whole app to deal with this stuff instead of just cramming it into one little spot in Xcode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those sorts of decisions, again, they reflect the thinking behind the people making the decisions about what these features are going to be like. Because if you say, well, this deserves its whole own app, with its whole own completely different design and workflow and really thinking through how it's all going to go, that would have resulted in a much better experience because you really kind of would have been saying from the start, yes, this is as important as Xcode to get this right. Where instead the message was, it's not that important. We're not putting that much effort into it. And, you know, it's been pretty crappy for a long time. Now, they've gradually improved it, like they've gradually improved a lot of things in Xcode going forward, especially, you know, Xcode 4 sort of started at a lower point, but now gradually certain things have gotten better about it. And they have made things better. There's been the ability to sort of auto-update your provisioning profiles. That certainly helped things a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So things have been getting better, but I think that really says something that they just stuffed it into this existing window. The existing window that never really had a very great purpose.
Right.
To start. So that's kind of me, all I'll do, ranting about the devices tab. Now, the second tab, the repositories tab, let's see. So it looks good. It's sort of aesthetically pleasing in the way the whole of Xcode 4 is aesthetically pleasing. It's got a nice gray and white color palette. It's got gradients. The spacing is really nice. It's obvious that they put some effort into making it much better looking than kind of the hodgepodge of how Xcode 3 looked. And it also matches the project window aesthetic. So you can see that there was a single design vision that ruled Xcode 4 unlike Xcode 3. Now, like most of the organizer tabs, they've got a source list to the left. And the source list is for the repositories tab. It has a little sort of folder-like entry, a little disclosure triangle, for every repository Xcode has ever known about. Now, on my computer, that's a fairly long list. Uh-huh. And it automatically finds them all. You basically can't stop it from finding them, right? Uh-huh. And so that, you know, again, that says quite a bit about how Xcode was thought through for Xcode 4. Because there isn't like a button which says, okay, you know what, now look for the new ones. Uh-huh. Now, there is a little plus sign, which is you can add your own. Or actually, you can, let's see, what can you do? You can add a repository or check out a repository. So, you know, has all the basic functionality. But basically, it's trying to do all this work for you behind the scenes with the minimum of UI controls for you as the developer to take charge of them. Now, the downside of this is that, and I saw this today when I was opening up the organizer, opening up the repositories tab, which I haven't done very much in the past, is that all the repositories that have been there in the past, but which I have since deleted, are still there.
Yeah. This actually really afflicts me because I write tons of tiny little spike apps I'm figuring mm-hmm. things out, and they're all created on the desktop. And mm-hmm. then Hazel goes, after 2 weeks of me not touching something, automatically archives things away from me. So the majority of my little repositories here are in red.
Right. And so what you have to do is you have to manually delete them. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing of making this sort of easy and no hassle is completely turned on its head, because it's totally a hassle. It's much worse of a hassle than if you had to go find these things yourself, because you have to keep deleting old stuff, and the list gets really long. So again, it seems like I'm a broken record here. It seems like they've valued looks and faux simplicity over actual workflow. And it gets worse, right? Because this list, which is, again, very nice aesthetic here, but one of the ways it gets to look as simple as it does is that it doesn't have a little bar for sorting.
Right.
So you've got 100 things, and they just show the name, and they're in random order. They're not in alphabetical order.
I think it seems to be, because I just actually created Spike while you were talking. Yeah. I was playing with the groups, so if I, you know, the folder references via the pure groups, as you're talking about. And it looks like the one I created is at the very end. Yep. But that's weird. The one above it has nothing to do with it. So, I don't know what order this is in.
Well, I do think they're in time-based order. They're in the order that they were found. I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that that's the case. Now, there is a little line underneath the title which has the which has the path to it.
Yes, but that would like to be wide, but unfortunately it's jammed in the source view. So.
Well, right. So the source view is very narrow by default. But the worst thing is it's a full path, which means all I see over and over again is volumes, blah, 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 blah. Volumes, blah, 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 blah. They're not differentiated. Whereas at least in some of the menu items that I've seen, when you look at recent projects, they'll make an effort to find the bit that's different and just show you that piece. That could actually be useful to have in that little space that you have there. But they didn't go ahead and do that for the repositories tab.
Mine is showing like relative paths with the tilde. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's because you have them in your user directory.
Okay.
I would bet that that's the case, yeah, because I don't, so it goes. But so, yes, it's relative to your user directory, but it's not relative. It's not just the pieces that are important. Because I bet most of your repositories say, you know, tilde/something, right?
Right.
It's still hard to see where they really should be. Mm-hmm. And one other thing that I noticed was that files don't seem to show up consistently. I guess, do you actually use Xcode's repositories tab? It doesn't sound like you use it very much.
No, not at all.
I've also had some problems with the, there's a little blue folder in the little disclosed area, mm-hmm. which I believe is supposed to represent your current checkout of this thing.
Yeah.
But the files that should be there, the entries that should be there in the main area of the window, they seem to be missing for me, and I'm not quite sure what's going on with that.
Mm-hmm. It does show up for me. It's a little file system nav.
Right. So sometimes it shows up for me, and for some things it doesn't, and I'm not quite sure why. Which again, if it only shows up, you know, 75% of the time, then I still wouldn't use it because, you know, hey, if it's not consistent, if it's not, if I can't rely on it, then I won't use it. And I don't use it. I use SourceTree instead, which is unfortunate because, you know, SourceTree is much busier as an application. It doesn't look as good, but maybe you have to look kind of a little too busy to put in all the functionality that the developers actually want. So yes, the repositories tab is it looks good, but oh, and actually the other thing that I like about it, I don't remember this. So, you know, it has all of the check-ins, all the lists there, and that's good. And then if you look at the check-ins, you can say, there's like a little button there that you have to disclose, but oh well, this is view changes, and that takes you to a visual diff of the changes. And this is actually the visual diffing in Xcode. I've mentioned it before. This is one thing I really like about Xcode. I really like how it looks. I like how it acts. I like the workflow of it. So this piece of it, like once you drill down into the actual change list, Xcode does pretty well with all this. I really like it. So I would love to be able to use this more, but I just feel like they didn't quite finish it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so I use SourceTree all the time, even though SourceTree is just busier in a way that I don't like visually. So there you go. Okay. So the next thing is the projects tab. And it's interesting. So the projects tab is the same thing as the repositories tab in that there's a whole list of things on the left-hand side. And they are, again, every project that Xcode has ever heard about, which means there's a lot of red entries for projects which no longer exist and that you have to manually delete, which is, again, quite unfortunate. And there's no sorting, whatever. And in this tab, you don't even have the path at all. So you have to look at them individually to find out where they are in the detail area of the window. But when you look at the detail pane, what you see is that even though it says it's the projects tab, what it really is the snapshots tab.
Mm.
Because while there is a little bit in there about derived data, I think you can get to the derived data in other ways as well. I don't think this is the only place to get to it. It gives you a chance to delete it, but I believe if you delete the build folder, you're deleting the derived data. I can't be entirely sure about that, but I believe that's true. But
in any case, if you go into the file menu under project settings, that's one way to get at your little drive data folder.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So, but now snapshots. Now, Wolf, you've heard of snapshots, I take it.
I know them and I hate them.
Yeah. So here's another little blast from the past about snapshots. Hopefully, again, talking about things that are way in the past that will be interesting to people, but you know, not revealing any really deep dark secrets from Apple. I was involved in creating snapshots.
Huh. I meant I love them. Yes.
Well, snapshots came about because of the problems with undoing refactoring. Now, sure. If you look at refactoring for other IDEs, what they do is when you implement a refactoring, when you initiate a refactoring, when you save a refactoring, it saves the individual changes for all of the files individually. Mm-hmm. So for each file, those changes are an additional entry onto that file's undo stack. Mm. And so if you go to any of these individual files and you make more changes further on, and then, you know, undo, redo, all sorts of stuff. If you undo back to the change that was the refactoring change, those changes are linked in what I refer to as the asteroid layer, because it's right. That makes sense, right? You know, all the little entries for those changes are at different levels for each of those stack, but they're linked. And if you hit one of those, what those other IDEs will do is they will say, "Hey, would you like to undo the refactoring changes for all of these files?"
Mm-hmm.
And if you say yes, then every change that's been made to any one of those files since the asteroid layer was weighed down, all gone.
Okay, so it's kind of like, I know, like, if you open up a document, and this is kind of before the auto-saving kind of stuff of 10.7 and 10.8, is like, you know, if you, like, make changes, save, and make more changes, and you try to undo past that save, it drops that sheet saying, hey, do you want to undo past what you've saved? But you said this actually would then apply to all the other files that have been affected in the refactoring?
Yep.
Okay.
And so this is, I believe, at the time, I was looking at this in Visual Studio and in Eclipse. There might have been others. But it was interesting to me because that struck me as being really a very wrong way to do that. Because what you have with undo redo for individual files is this mechanism which has certain characteristics. It is very fast. It has no UI associated with it at all. And it has those characteristics because you don't need the UI for it, because it is so fast. It's really meant to be something that you just instinctively do right there, and you don't need to think about it. Whereas the changes that you're making for refactoring are completely different. They're in a completely different category. Because what you want to do is you want to see all those changes together if you want to decide how to undo them or what to undo for them. You don't want to just tack that onto regular per file undo. Now, one of the ways that you can get around this is with project level undo. And I think there's a reason why no one's ever really tried to do this. Actually, you know who did this? The very first version of Dash Code did this.
Oh.
It's completely project-wide. And what you saw was that if you kept pressing the Z, Command-Z, it would keep shifting you around to different places in the project. Because it would, change your change over here, and then change your change over here, and then change over here, your change over in this other place. And it was weird. And I believe it only worked, in as much as it did work, was because Dash Code was meant to be a very simple environment. It was meant to be an IDE, but it was still meant to be for people who were not really programmers. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think it would work for Xcode. So the thinking went that if you want to then have some sort of undo, some sort of way of backing out your refactoring changes, you need a different mechanism. Instead of it being something which is really quick and UI-less, you want something which is more substantial and which always has a UI associated with it. And so that was the idea. The idea was snapshots were supposed to be pretty much completely separate than undo redo, but they were their own thing where you say, okay, I'm going to snapshot this project now and then make some changes. So you can always look and see what your changes were and how to undo them. So that was the idea anyway. Now, of course, what wound up happening was that sort of a thing, that sort of an idea of, okay, now I'm going to copy your entire project somewhere else, is really hard. And we didn't do it. We weren't able to do it as well as we should have been able to do it. So, what tended to happen was if you left snapshots on when you were doing refactoring, is you have to wait, however long to copy your entire project. And there were problems with it, and you could lose your data with it. It was buggy and all this other stuff. So it really didn't work very well. Now, from what I understand, the Xcode 4 implementation is different. And I think it's better, but it's the same thing. I have the same reaction that I think most people did, which is, I can't use this. This doesn't work very well. I can't rely on it. And it's not fast enough, blah, blah, blah. So even though, I had a hand in coming up with the idea, I don't use it. And the other thing is, it really only would have worked. Like undo redo at a file level is something that everybody knows about. Everybody's used to. It's like a second skin. And even a lot of the other things in Xcode as well. Like I think one of the reasons why, for example, I didn't like AppCode was not because AppCode did things in a way that no other app did. And like every other app did it one way and AppCode did it another way. Well, no. A lot of the IDE stuff that you look at these days is stuff that Xcode does that nobody else needs to do, because no other standard Mac app is an IDE and has to be as complicated as Xcode is. But enough of Xcode's functionality has become like second nature to people, because it was easy, because it did fulfill a need, that when AppCode did something different, it felt very jarring. I think the same thing needed to happen with snapshots. It needed to become something that became part of people's vocabulary. A developer vocabulary was, of course an IDE does snapshots. I'm used to it. I can use it. It works for me. And when that didn't happen, I think in part, again, because it didn't really work that well to start off with, it lost that chance for it to become part of your vocabulary. And if it isn't part of that vocabulary, even if it is useful, it's just not going to, it's not going to have the advantage of being a natural part of your workflow. Now, so I'm a little scared to ask this, but have I touched on, at least some of your problems with snapshots?
Yeah, I mean, mostly, I might have been more amenable to them if the underlying mechanism of it was the compressed sparse image DLE or whatever it was. Right. And if it could have maybe integrate better with Git or something like that, which of course nowadays it does. It seems like the kernel implementation currently in Xcode 4 is that it is using something much lighter weight, but maybe not even then, because now that I think about it, it's like, I already don't let Xcode get, I don't use Xcode's SEM facilities for a philosophical reason. And that's because, it's less of an issue with Git nowadays, but the philosophical reason is that when you look at like a project folder and you have the Xcode project folder in it, and you have source code in there, of course, but then you have all this stuff that isn't source code. You have documentation, notes, journals about what's going on. You have a lot of screenshots. You have Photoshop files in there, and you have a lot of stuff that surrounds a project that isn't code. And as you kind of mentioned at the beginning of the episode, it's kind of a pain to create groups for that stuff, and you really don't want to, because really that's not Xcode's business at all, because Xcode is about actually building the app. It's not about this subsidiary stuff. And so, but of course, all that also should be in version control. So to this day, I don't let Xcode touch the version control, and I do it all manually. GitX is my weapon of choice currently for manipulating this stuff. But even before then, I use SVNX, or I just use the command line for this stuff.
Right. So you used Git in anger. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I also the other thing is, yes, certainly if you use source control extensively, you will often not need to worry about, hey, do I need to snapshot this thing before I go ahead and make some big change. And I think Git makes that a lot easier because of the ability to stash things.
Uh-huh.
I really like how Git lets you do that. Because you really do, I don't know, like you're not gonna check in, every little change you make. Well, then maybe you are. I actually do quite a bit of that myself. But I still will only tend to check in changes once I've got something working.
Yeah.
So if you're in the middle of something, again, I think snapshots could have been a very useful thing to as that thing you do between check-ins.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Okay, so let's see. I will try to wrap this up. I did want to talk a little bit about the documentation tab. And so let's see. Is there anyone who likes the documentation window in Xcode? Raise your hands. Yeah.
I think there's a reason why Dash and is popular in the App Store.
Well, now, so the reason why I tend not to like it, right, is because, well, some of the UI is pretty clunky. It doesn't seem to, if they've sort of ironed out all the little glitches about navigating inside of the HTML that makes up the documentation. But for the most part, the big reason that I don't use it is because searching just is really bad, right? Like you type something in and you know it's going to beach ball and you know it's going to take, endless seconds to bring up what you want to look at.
Yeah.
And the fact is, you could Google this stuff like that. And actually, so the documentation window is the one, or the tab, I'm gonna get my terminology confused here, but it's the one thing where you might say, having all these disparate things inside of one window means that you can't, for example, look at documentation while you're looking at something else at the same time. Now, mm-hmm. in practice, this doesn't wind up being a problem because Apple's Xcode documentation is so high level that if you're looking at another place in the UI and saying, well, why doesn't this work? What's wrong with this? How do I do this thing that doesn't seem intuitive in the UI? You know what? The documentation isn't going to help you because it's so high level. It really, this is the build window. Here are the three areas of the build window. Well, yes, but then, what are the gotchas of the build window? Well, you're not going to find out in the documentation. You're going to find out in Stack Overflow. And if you're looking at Stack Overflow for your documentation, well, you can open as many browser windows as you want and put them right next to your Xcode window. So, you basically just routed around the deficiencies of the documentation window as far as I'm concerned, as far as most people are concerned. So even, it's not great, but it's not really a problem. And the other thing that I wanted to say about this was that, quick search is a hard problem. Like you can't just throw all your data into core data and do a fetch request and be done. No, you've got to, you know, you've got to do some deep, deep work to make this stuff work well, at least as far as I'm aware. And so the kind of people who can make these large data sets go blindingly fast are generally not the same engineers who can make pretty general purpose UI. And I say this as an engineer who can make pretty general purpose UI. You know, you need someone at Apple who's got a different skill set to make this work. And who knows, maybe they just should say, you know, don't bother, just get rid of it. Of course, they're not going to do that. But until they do, and actually, you know, I was kind of thinking, well, you know, what team, what part of Apple could you go to that could make, you know, sort of data set search and caching and everything else work really well? And my mind actually was coming up in a bit of a blank because, you know, you actually get the same problem with Spotlight. Spotlight will beach ball. Has it gotten better? It used to beach ball all the time when you wanted to search for stuff. And you know, other areas, you know, Apple is not necessarily that great at doing local data sets well. So maybe, you know, maybe there wasn't even anybody to go to make this better. I don't know.
Yeah, so I just did a search for is opaque. So I started to type in, which is a method on CLayer. And so I type in is OP into the Xcode documentation organizer. Yeah. And first two hits are repeated is AU graph is open, and then something to do with security, and then handle is open, having to do with, it looks like, IOKids human interface device support. And I type that same query into Dash, and not only does it come back much faster, but it's a second hit that I'm interested in. So Dash does such a better job, and Andy Lee's Apkido also is excellent at this type of stuff. And one of the things I love this to this day about Apkido is how it understands categories and will show you subclasses. And that's really kind of a real failure of Xcode's documentation as something that I wish Dash could do. So but like you said, they kind of have to have something. And that said, the documentation is nice, and when I'm getting that quick information that's in line in the little popover view in the Xcode editor itself. So that the small amount of information seems to work pretty well. But yes, so they have to have it, and it's good in certain scenarios. But for the general case, which is unfortunately the common case, I have to go outside Xcode for that.
Right, and so the good point, I was actually thinking of mentioning that the inline help, because it has so much more context, and they're actually using the context, yeah, I think that's done quite nicely. And, you know, again, if they just wanted to leave it at that, and I think they are trying to put more and more stuff local. And that's a good direction to go in. But you say Dash. Now, I'm not sure I've probably heard of it, but I don't remember it. Dash is a third-party application?
Yeah. Have you ever used an app called Gradients?
Gradients?
Ingredients?
Ingredients, no.
Okay. Similar. I think it might be a fork, although I'm not 100% sure of that. But yeah, it seems to be kind of the current hot documentation app. And it's I think it's available exclusively on the App Store. Now, it was free for a while. He's charging for it now. But it's one of the nice things about it is that, of course, it's very fast. But it also integrates very nicely with a bunch of other documentation system. So it's not Cocoa specific, although that's kind of its bread and butter. But I'm just going through the list here, and things like ActionScript, Akka, Android, Arduino, Backbone.js, C++. So these are actually presented in the preferences where you just can hit a download button and it gets integrated into the main search. So it's kind of like this. So if you're a developer and you have this, like, you care about Arduino and you care about YUI and you care about Objective-C, like, you can hit the download button three times, it's all integrated and you're ready to go. And it's very easy to, as you're working on different things, kind of check and uncheck things.
Well, again, this makes me think that they probably would have done a better job if someone had said, you know what, I'm gonna make a documentation app that's separate. And so we can hire the people who will just do documentation, and they will, you know, you'll be able to have a full team on it, and they'll be able to, you know, sort of go wild. They won't have to worry about the compromises that you need to make to integrate into a much larger application. They'll just be able to do that one thing really well. Mm-hmm. And you didn't. So, you know, we're up to two apps now that they could split off from that, and I think they would have done a better job at. I think we're, I mean, I'm kind of done, so that'll be it, two apps. But really, again, you just got to think that, you know, Xcode is just, it's too much of a kitchen sink for this sort of stuff. So it's unfortunate. Although, of course, in this case, the documentation window had all of these problems when it was its own window as well. So it's only really made sort of moderately worse by being thrown into the organizer. But so that's it for me. You have any other tidbits?
Yeah,
for...
we're at the 50-minute mark, so I'll make it quick. Okay. A couple of things. So when you're talking about the groups and the folder references type stuff, yes. And you don't really have a choice there, that's actually one of the things that I seriously considered with Xmode, was to kind of have, instead of, because Xmode does two things. It basically syncs the file system with the normal groups, which are the yellow ones, not the blue folders.
Right.
And so it's responsible for keeping that in sync, because it's important, as you know. And that's really powerful in itself. And that's could also be applicable to many other projects, not just synchronizing your Maj objects source folder with the project. And so I seriously considered splitting that out, but because it was been rough going, and with the AppScript support being dropped, and right now it's obviously totally broken, that's not something I've taken out myself. But yeah, there's kind of like you remember the Akash interface was originally kind of derided, or at least gave the acronym of WIMP, of Windows Icons Mouse Pointer, and it seems to me like basically two of those have kind of gone passe. Where Xcode obviously doesn't want to have multiple windows. It likes to shove everything into... it sounds like there's basically like two windows in Xcode. There's the project window that you're currently working on, maybe the workspace that spans multiple projects. And now you have the organizer for everything else. And which is unfortunate, because I really like windows. I really like having multiple windows for multiple things, each one having kind of its own dimensions for showing the data and being able to overlap them. I think one of my favorite things of Mac OS X ever really was Exposé, because it really showed the power of Windows in terms of a spatial organizational tool. And so I was a big fan of that. And the M of WIMP, the menus. Again, I'm a big fan of the menu bar. And it's unfortunately, I think... Microsoft's user interface research has kind of borne this out, and why they went with the ribbon thing, which is atrocious visually, but I don't know, maybe it's effective in user interface studies. But really the menu bar has seemed to have also gone passe, and this has gone a while back, and that I personally love the menu bar. I love how it takes a very little a room when you don't need it, and yet it's discoverable. But it seems like normals don't want to. You know, when they want to do something new with an app that they haven't done before, it seems one of the things that they don't often reach for is kind of explore the menu system.
Right.
Especially if you do things like you said you had to do with the Xcode, where if you have a bunch of submenus, right? It's one thing when you have kind of the XY of dimensionality of the menuing system, where it's like, okay, I have to only cross two axes to kind of read the entire menuing system. And so that's that's not too bad. But once you go submenus, it just starts to feeling fractal, and it feels like you can just never totally understand all the menus. And I think another great innovation of Mac OS X was, the spotlight for the menuing system. And I find myself going to that a lot on new apps. I'm like, I know I can flip this thing horizontally, but I just started using a new app sketch. And I know it's there and somewhere, but I just started using it, and just show me where it is. And the combo of not only being able to find it, but also show you where it is in the menu is a great innovation. And so it's like, I always viewed like windows and menus as one of the bread and butter of the Mac UI and computer UIs in general. And that's why I loved Exposé. I loved the menu bar search functionality, but there definitely is a push against that, and I understand it. There's a bunch of problems, and this could be a full episode in itself. But yes, the entire shortening of the menus strikes me as very much, well, this tension between like progressive disclosure versus making things look simpler than they are, And I'm a total fan of progressive disclosure, and that's like the good side of that coin. But the bad side is when things are necessarily complicated and you don't expose that complexity in a way that can be directly manipulatable in a common case, where it's like, yes, I have to control these five variables all the time to get this work done, but I'm only going to show you two, and I'm going to the other three have defaults or maybe what have you. I think probably a good example is in the Xcode 4 UI is the entire schemes thing, where I'm almost always, if I'm going to hit that run button, it's most of the time I'm hitting the option button to drop that sheet so I can fiddle with the things I need to fiddle with. And it's one of these things where they kind of tuck it away, this thing I have to do a lot. And what I'm saying is that there's ways to manage this type of complexity that I think is kind of, in my less charitable times, I think it's the more faddish type stuff where it's like, we just don't, that's how you did things in the 80s or 90s. And we just don't do that anymore. But again, I think there are serious legitimate concerns here, criticisms of I really like the discoverability of things in iOS where everything is visible all the time. And the menus kind of walk that line. I think they walk it very well. But the idea that everything is exposed all the time and you just kind of walk this hierarchy in your head. But I'm getting past myself there. And of course, we should cut this off because we're already sitting at 56 minutes. But so that's it for me.
No, but it's an interesting topic, and I suspect we will come back to it. One last thing I will add is that same idea of hiding complexity behind a simpler interface appears to be what a lot of people have been complaining about with the new iTunes version. In that it seems to be a worrying trend for Apple that I'm not sure quite what it is, that they're not willing to actually redesign things to have elegance and complexity combined in an easy way to understand, that they want to hide stuff. And maybe that's showing the limits of what you can do with conventional UI. Mm-hmm. But I hope not. I hope it's just kind of saying, well, maybe Apple's a little stretched at this point. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not sure quite what the reason is. But again, I hope that it's not an inherent limitation. It's just current flaws in how Apple is doing things. But we shall see. All right, so please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. You can find us individually on Twitter, me, A. Pontius, A-P-O-N-T-I-O-U-S, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench, that's the word Rent, R-A-N-T, plus Z, plus S-C-H. We'll see you next time.